Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease." The doctors of the future are here. Welcome to Phase 3 Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, MD, one of the doctors of the future.
Good afternoon, and thank you for listening this beautiful Sunday afternoon. This is Dr. Keith Henry, MD, broadcasting live from right outside of Orlando, Florida, on this 16th day of September, 2018. Again, thank you for joining me here at the Phase 3 Wellness Blog Talk Radio and Podcast. We have a very interesting and fascinating show for you today. And again, I'd like to thank you for chiming in, for listening in today. We are going to follow our outline as we always do. And we have some very interesting articles. The first two articles that I'm going to be analyzing is one is going to be from Live365, NaturalHealth365.com rather. And the other is going to be from Mercola.com. Then in the second segment, which is our healing food segment, I'm going to talk about a few of the benefits of pineapple. Well, very delicious fruit, but also a very healthful fruit. I'm not going to go into a lot of the details, but I am going to go into some of the details and some of the benefits of pineapple. Again, as you heard me say before, let your medicine be your food and your food be your medicine. Again, my name is Dr. Keith Henry. I am a naturopath with a ministry in practice based in Orlando, Florida. And again, as you heard me say before, if you've listened before, all natural modalities typically will have a spiritual, an element, a physical element, emotional element, basically the holistic perspective. And I, just so you know, I address the spiritual perspective from a Christian angle. Most natural health modalities will tend to address the spiritual perspective from a Middle East, or rather Far Eastern religion perspective. I choose to address it from a Christian perspective. I think it makes the most sense and is the most applicable in a real world situation. So let's not beat around the bush any longer, for lack of a better term. Let's jump right into our first article. And again, if you haven't listened before, we have basically three segments. In the first segment, we deal with a couple of articles that came out in Natural Health. It's called A Week in Natural News Review segment. In the second segment, we deal with the healing food. In our third segment, which I didn't mention, we'll be dealing with an herb, a healing herb, in that third segment. And this week, we want to look a little bit into the herb sarsaparilla, which is basically known in herbology as an herb as a blood cleanser. But we'll talk a little bit about that when we get into that segment as well. Again, thank you for joining me. I'm Dr. Keith Henry, and we're going to go ahead and jump right into this. So my first article is, again, from we're going to analyze NaturalHealth365.com. It's an article entitled "Antibiotics Guilty of Raising the Risk of Kidney Stones by Nearly 30%. And just as in passing, I didn't say that the second article is from that we're going to analyze it from Mercola.com. And there's basically dozens of studies say that diet, soda have a link to brain damage, diabetes, and depression. So we'll deal with that as the second article in this first segment. So first, let's go ahead and jump right into our first article, antibiotics guilty of raising the risk of kidney stones by nearly 30%. Again, that's from Natural Health 365. And as we look at the article, it says the kidney stones were once a rare occurrence in children, but that's no longer the case. And it goes on to point out how the leading pediatric urologist, Gregory E. Tyson, MD, characterizes the current incidence of kidney stones among children as an epidemic. This I didn't know. I didn't realize that the level of kidney stones amongst children was, as he put it, at an epidemic level. While noting that the overall, he says, prevalence of kidney stones has increased by 70% in the past 30 years. The article goes on to point out further that, and there is evidence that suggests that the use of antibiotics may be at least partially responsible. And The article goes on to point out further that there was a new study conducted by researchers at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and that this study shows a connection between antibiotics and gut health, and as well as the formation of kidney stones. Now, most people are aware that antibiotics do affect the bacterial flora. It's not good for your good bacteria. And so anytime you take antibiotics, you have to basically replace that good bacteria with some type of a probiotic. But the article goes on to point out that this study that was conducted by researchers at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia shows the connection between antibiotics, gut health, and the formation of kidney stones. And it says that with children aged 2 years and younger constituting the most frequent recipients of antibiotics, maybe the recent surge, the article points out, in an occurrence of kidney stones isn't as much as a mystery after all. So we learned, number one, that there was a study conducted by the researchers at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and in this research, it shows a connection between antibiotics, gut health, and the formation of kidney stones. And then he also points out how children aged about 2 years old and younger are the ones that mainly constitute the most frequent prescriptions of antibiotics. Now, the article goes on to point out further that to conduct the study, which was published last May in the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, researchers examined medical records of adults and children in the UK over a 21-year period. And this 21-year period spanned from 1994 until 2015. And the team evaluated previous exposure to antibiotics in nearly 26,000 patients with kidney stones and compared them with records of over 260,000 controlled subjects. They found that five classes of antibiotics, including broad-spectrum penicillin-type antibiotics, which are antibiotics that kill both what they call gram-positive and gram-negative bacteria, which incidentally a natural antibiotic that would do the same thing is garlic. But that's what I was going to talk about that today in our healing foods, but I'm not going to have time. So maybe we'll talk about that one next week as we're going to be dealing with a different healing food today. But they found that these five different antibiotics had issues and that they were associated with a significantly heightened kidney stone risk of up to 27%. They went on to point out further, researchers found that the highest risk was in younger patients who had recently been exposed to antibiotics. They found out further that the risk remained elevated even several years after antibiotic use. And this is one of the problems that the risk is not just, as shown in this study, not just a short-term risk, which is the case with pretty much any pharmaceutical drug, is that most people think that once they stop the drug that potential risks are going to just stop, that potential risks will go away within, you know, a few weeks or a month or whatnot. And many, many cases, that's not the case. In many cases, if not most, those drugs stay in your system. They get embedded into your tissues, et cetera. And unless you specifically go about some type of program to do a deep detox, they will remain in your body and in your system and can crop up later on to cause diseases. Remember, all pharmaceutical drugs have side effects, both known and unknown, and many of them are unknown only to you, and they have been hidden as we've seen this come out over years and years and years, over time when we found that these companies have hidden deadly side effects that they knew about, but knowing that they if they had allowed these on the market, they may not have been able to get approval. So again, just understand that as we're seeing with these antibiotics and these children 2 years and under, that they can basically end up developing, have a significant risk of developing kidney stones even years after they have stopped the antibiotic use. Dr. Tassayan, the study leader, noted that the research suggested that antibiotic prescription practices are a modifiable risk factor for kidney stones. And so basically the article asks the question, exactly how does antibiotic use raise the likelihood of kidney stones? And it goes on to point out, studies have shown that consuming antibiotics can disturb the all-important balance of the microbiome, the community, basically the bacteria. living in the human body. And they live primarily in the gastrointestinal tract. And the article points out, further, while a healthy population of friendly bacteria boosts immunity, aids absorption of nutrients, and even promotes clear thinking and stable mood, an unbalanced set of your good bacteria in the gut can cause a lot of problems, because it creates an atmosphere in where the unfriendly bacteria or pathogens can actually get a grip on you, or get the upper hand on your good bacteria, and this can set the stage for leaky gut syndrome, autoimmune diseases, dementia, cancer, and many other issues that can be developed, that can develop in your gastrointestinal tract, which can and which will affect your entire health. Now, it's interesting, the article goes on to point out further how antibiotics not only create an environment that favors the growth of pathogens, but they also kill valuable friendly bacteria outright, which is kind of what I've said earlier. The article cites a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association that showed that fully 30% of antibiotics prescribed through office visits are inappropriate or unnecessary. So again, it's an interesting study, and that was done by the Journal of the American Medical Association, which is favorable to pharmaceutical medicine. So if a study had been done by someone that's less favorable, you may even have a higher rate of unsubscribed or unnecessary prescription of giving antibiotics, unnecessary rate of giving these antibiotics. Now, the article also cites a fact that's pointing out how kidney stones, experts predict rather, that kidney stones will strike 10% of American adults. It says kidney stones, also known as are deposits of minerals and salts that can block the urinary tract, and most are composed of calcium and oxalates. And researchers say that they will affect 1 in 10 American adults at some points in their lives. These painful stones usually pass from the body without incidents after a few days, but the process can be painful. In some cases, untreated kidney stones can progress to kidney damage and even potentially life-threatening kidney failure. The article points out symptoms include severe pain in the lower back and sides, along with abdominal pain, nausea, and vomiting. Bloody or cloudy urine can also indicate kidney stones. Naturally, you should seek immediate medical attention for severe kidney stone symptoms. In the article, we're going to point out poor diet, dehydration, having certain medical conditions, and taking calcium supplements and antacids are among the factors that can trigger kidney stones. Again, especially not drinking enough water. There are other things as well, but that is many Americans, not only Americans, but people around the world are severely dehydrated. And sustained long-term dehydration can seriously help create an atmosphere within the body that can help lend itself to the creation of kidney stones. Now, the article went on to point out something interesting. It says, to combat kidney stones, many doctors prescribe potassium citrate, which increases urine citrate and lowers calcium excretion. As natural healers have long known, lemons, lemon juice, and lemonade are also rich in citrate, along with beneficial antioxidants and flavonoids. And this is true. In fact, the article went on to say that in the prestigious Duke University Comprehensive Kidney Stone Center conducted a small study which showed that kidney stones patients on lemonade therapy experienced decreases in the growth of kidney stones. Preparing this sweet natural remedy couldn't be much simpler, the article goes on to point out. This is true. Most natural practitioners will understand that drinking plenty of water, especially if you add a pinch of salt, by drinking plenty of water and by also following very good dietary practices, you can significantly decrease the likelihood that you will develop kidney stones. And so, again, just remember, it's very important to drink plenty of water, to have a healthy lifestyle, to deal with your stress, to eat healthy, and to just do the thing that most people know to do, but many times they just don't take the time to do. And I have a call coming in here. Give me just a second. Hello?
Yes, Dr. Henry. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing today?
Yeah, just Mike. My friend, absolutely what you're saying is the truth. And also Diet Coke can hurt your heart. And people who are drinking it, they're more vulnerable to stroke and heart attacks and vascular death, according to researchers from University of Miami and Columbia University. The study found that diet soda devotees were 43% more likely to have experienced vascular event than those who drank none. So I believe last time we touched base, I'm not sure what Pepsi and all this diet Pepsi is all the same. Anything is processed is not good.
Right. That's correct. And then actually the second article that I'm going to deal with in this segment is going to go into more detail about the dangers of diet soda.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a lot of people that my friends and et cetera, they eat. They are having more diarrhea. They have more depression. They have, I'm not in favor of any of those. Canada Dry or Schweppes, all of them has the same thing. Ingredients are just read ingredients. It's a mess. And I'm not sure why they keep advertising in the TV or Pepsi or Coca-Cola. Oh, I'm thirsty. One glass of Coke. I don't get it, my friend.
Right. I think what it is, Mike, is that they know that a lot of people want to lose weight, and so they're taking advantage of the myth that diet soda can actually help you lose weight. And so they're appealing to the people's desires. Many people are not willing to make the necessary sacrifices. If those who want to lose weight, they're not willing to make the necessary sacrifices. So by offering people, you know, diet sodas, it gives the impression that it's going to not give you as many calories. It's basically a marketing gimmick. It contributes to a marketing gimmick pretty much.
Yes, so, indeed. Yeah, I mean, I agree with your show 100% and your beautiful show you have. I hope more people wake up, because if you wake up today, it's better than you be wake up tomorrow, because tomorrow is too late for you.
Thank
you very much, Mike.
And thank you for listening, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Again, we thank Mike again for his comments. He calls in, he offers a lot of good insight. Now, we'll pivot now from our talk about antibiotics and their tendency to contribute to the development of kidney stones, especially in children 2 and below, but in just in general. And remember, anytime if you end up taking antibiotics, I recommend going with natural antibiotics first. We've talked about garlic and olive leaf extract and many, many other natural antibiotics in terms of the herbal world. There are many other ones, but we'll talk about that maybe in the future. But give natural antibiotics a try first and foremost. Also, you know, take probiotics, because they have an effect of increasing your good bacteria and keeping your bad bacteria, the unfriendly bacteria, as it were, from getting a hold or getting into the majority and causing problems. And so, again, but in the event that you've taken regular antibiotics, or if you're in a situation where you have to take antibiotics for something and you don't have access to natural antibiotics, you have to remember that you need to, after that round of antibiotics, you need to do all in your power to replace that good gut bacteria. If not, you're going to have issues. As we pointed out there in those bacteria with those children, the studies found that not only was there a short-term effect, but years later, you can be affected by those antibiotics. So now let's pivot over into, my name is Dr. Keith Henry. You listen to Phase 3 Wellness Radio, Blog Talk Radio and Podcast Show. And again, I'm here every week on Sundays. And this replay is available about 5 minutes after I go off air live. Again, it's here on Blog Talk Radio. It's also on social media across different platforms. Get it, share it with your loved ones and your family, because remember, your health is exceedingly important. I see so many people who suffer and people who die who really didn't have to. And so just remember, you can't really enjoy life the way that the Creator intended for you to enjoy life if you don't have good health. And so, again, let's pivot over to our next article. We're still in our first segment, the Week in Natural News Review. This is another article. This article came out this week as well, and it's from DrMarcola.com. Dozens of studies, it's basically entitled, Dozens of Studies Say Diet Linked to Brain Damage, diet soda, rather, is linked to brain damage, diabetes, and depression. Now, Marcola points out, he says, diet soda is falling out of favor due to growing unpopularity of artificial sweeteners like aspartame and Splenda. PepsiCo even replaced the aspartame in Diet Pepsi with Splenda in 2015 in an effort to win back customers who become wary of aspartame's health effects. And a lot of that is at the benefit of people in the natural health community and who have been educating the populace on the dangers of some of these things. And so as a result, when you have this type of education, the people can become educated and then make more informed decisions. He goes on to point out in the article, at the time, PepsiCo said the number one request by its customers was to remove aspartame from Diet Pepsi. Senior Vice President of Pepsi's flavor unit, Seth Kaufman, noted Diet Cola drinkers in the U.S. told us they want an aspartame-free Diet Pepsi. However, the article goes on, annual per capita consumption of carbonated soft drinks in 2015 was 658 ounce servings, the lowest rate since 1985, according to a report from industry tracking group Beverage Digest. The article goes on to say PepsiCo had the steepest decline, a 3.1% volume loss, and their Diet Pepsi product was particularly hit hard with a nearly 6% drop. In the first quarter of 2016, Diet Pepsi sales fell even more, declining 10.6%, according to Beverage Digest. To save their slumping sales and please customers who apparently dislike the taste of the aspartame-free Diet Pepsi, the company is reintroducing Diet Pepsi Classic Sweetener Blend, Diet Pepsi sweetened with aspartame, back on the market. So essentially, they're bringing back the complaints of the customers of the Diet Pepsi not tasting the same. Their sales begin to fall, so they're going to bring back the Diet Coke being sweetened with aspartame, which aspartame is known to cause cancer. But let's look a little bit more into this article. Not only does it cause cancer, but there's some other issues that it causes. The classic Diet Pepsi is slated to come back to the market. The article went on to say, and he gave more details, but and this was he's referencing back a couple of years back in 2016. He says Classic Diet Pepsi is slated to come back to the market in September 2016, featuring a light blue can, and a silver can would be the regular Diet Pepsi sweetened with Splenda. So you have one sweetened with aspartame, the other sweetened with Splenda. He goes on to point out how, unfortunately, all of this relabeling and reintroducing is missing the point, which is not only the soda is detrimental to your health, no matter what shade, flavor, or color, but also that diet soda by any name is likely even worse, as pointed out by Mike in his call. But it's basically all the same. Many people who are overweight, the article goes on to point out, or obese also struggle with pre-diabetes or type 2 diabetes and consequently choose artificial sweeteners over sugar, believing the former to be a healthier choice. Yet, studies have found that artificial sweeteners, including aspartame, may lead to weight gain and glucose intolerance by altering gut microbiota. So think about it. If you're overweight, you're already at risk of diabetes. And now people are drinking this Diet Coke that actually is going to more than likely contribute to glucose intolerance. So it's going to increase the likelihood, if you don't have diabetes already, it's going to increase the likelihood that you will develop diabetes. And if you already have it, it's going to typically worsen it. And the article goes on to say further, unbeknownst to many, aspartame has been found to increase hunger ratings compared to glucose or water and is associated with heightened motivation to eat, even more so than other artificial sweeteners like saccharin. And he goes on to say further, for a substance often used in diet products, the fact that aspartame may actually increase weight gain is incredibly misleading. A recent study, he says, published in the journal Applied Physiology, Nutrition, and Metabolism, also found that consuming aspartame may be associated with greater glucose intolerance, particularly for people who are obese. According to the study, and this is a quote, this study provides evidence that consumption of aspartame may be associated with greater diabetes risk in individuals with higher adiposity. Aspartame is reported to be associated with changes in gut microbiota that are associated with impairments in insulin resistance in lean and obese rodents. We observed that aspartame was related to significantly greater impairments in the glucose intolerance for individuals with obesity. And Marcola goes on to point out further that this is far from the first time artificial sweeteners have been linked to metabolic problems. According to a separate research published in PLOS One, regular consumption of artificially sweetened soft drinks is associated with disorders of the metabolic syndrome, including insulin resistance and or impaired glucose tolerance and high blood pressure. And it goes on to talk about a little bit more information. So basically, drinking these diet sodas, you're significantly increasing the likelihood that you will become pre-diabetic, insulin resistant first, then pre-diabetic, and more than likely end up with full-blown diabetes, because typically people who drink these sodas might not make the best decisions when it comes to their diet. And then when you're drinking this Coke, it's only going to do, or any diet drink for that matter, is going to cause the additional cravings in the body for other types of things. So there are a lot of issues when dealing with these diet sodas. He goes on to say, yeah, it's only aspartame that's linked to health problems. So if you're thinking that sticking with PepsiCo Splenda sweetened diet soda is smarter, he says you're being misled. Like aspartame, Splenda affects your body's insulin response. So no matter how you cut it, you're going to be affecting the insulin levels and your insulin response in your body. He says when study participants drank a Splenda sweetened beverage, their insulin levels rose about 20% higher than when they consume only water prior to taking a glucose challenge test. He says further, blood sugar levels also peaked at a higher level, so the artificial sweetener was related to an enhanced blood insulin and glucose response. The researchers have pointed out when they're looking at when they're researching the issue here with this Diet Coke and these artificial sweeteners. He goes on to say that PepsiCo is desperately trying to grab a corner of the market. It currently misses that which is health conscious consumers. Reformulating its diet soda is just one of its plans toward this end. So again, remember, just understand these companies, no matter what they say, we need to understand they're not interested. Let me put it this way. Their number one goal is not your health. Their number one goal is to make money. There's nothing wrong with making money, but you should not do it at someone else's expense, especially putting their health and life in danger. But we need to understand that their number one goal is not to look after your health. You and I are chiefly responsible for our own health. We're responsible for educating ourselves, for eating right, drinking right, drinking water, especially, and you know, natural juices, etc. Making sure that our food, we eat the right types of food, taking the right type of supplementation if necessary. But ultimately, it's our responsibility because remember, their number one responsibility, even of drug companies, their number one responsibility is not, you know, don't think that they care that you have a heart attack or that they care. And I'm not saying everybody in the company is like that, but I'm saying as a company, as a corporation, their number one goal is to make money. Nothing wrong with making money. I'm just pointing out that we should not become confused and begin to think that they're going to put our best interests in terms of our health over their interest in making money. That's just not going to happen. And we should know that by now. Marcola goes on to say in this article that in the case of Diet Pepsi, they can call it whatever they want and put it in any color can that they can possibly imagine, but it won't change the fact that it's almost It's among, rather, the worst beverages you can consume for your health. He goes on to point out further that 92% of independently funded studies found aspartame may cause adverse effects, including depression and headaches. Now, it's interesting. These are independent studies. 92% of independently funded studies, he says, found aspartame may cause adverse effects, including depression and headaches. He points out further, a study also found the administration of aspartame to rats resulted in detectable methanol even after 24 hours, which might be responsible for inducing oxidative stress in the brain. So here you have, again, a situation where this methanol might be causing brain damage as a result of drinking these Diet Cokes. He says aspartame is made up of aspartic acid and phenylalanine, but the phenylalanine has been synthetically modified to carry a methyl group, which provides the majority of the sweetness. The phenylalanine, methyl bond, basically is a synthetic form, and it's basically causes or can cause havoc to and in the brain. He says, in short, both animals and humans have small structures in the brain and in each cell. There are a couple of hundred in every cell of your body, which are designed to detoxify a variety of chemicals. He says humans have the same number as non-human animals, but humans cannot convert the toxic formaldehyde into harmless formic acid. Formaldehyde is a known carcinogen that causes retinal damage, interferes with DNA replication, and may cause birth defects. He goes on to say further, something that I kind of hinted at earlier, that by drinking these diet foods, these diet sodas, it actually increases the desire or the likelihood for other junk food. And he points that out as well. He says, diet soda is a scam of the worst kind, he says, because those who drink it typically believe they're doing their body a favor by cutting out some calories. But research shows diet soda drinkers may later compensate for the calories they didn't consume in the soda by eating more high sugar, high sodium, and high in unhealthy fat foods later in the day. They may also feel compelled to eat more junk food because the diet beverage didn't satisfy their craving or desire for calories. Obese adults, he goes on to say, were affected the most and had the highest incremental daily calorie intake from unhealthy foods associated with diet beverages, which again shows that the people most likely to consume artificial sweeteners are also among those most likely to be harmed by them. And so again, we understand that the word diet before soda is really a misnomer, that sodas are not diet foods. They're not even really foods. You could call them junk foods, but essentially they're nothing. They have no real nutritional value for your body, so they can scarcely be called foods. And so again, if you're overweight or you're dealing with obesity, just understand that, you know, there are really no shortcuts to health. You've heard me talk about on here many, many times that I follow my practice and follow overall just in life, the laws of health, trust in the creator, sunshine, exercise, water, air, rest, diet, and self-control or temperance. These basic laws and a basic scientific application of these laws would basically help us see and help us to understand and experience great health, not only in terms of theory, but real world good health. Again, this is Dr. Keith Henry. You listen to the Phase 3 Wellness Podcast and Blog Talk Radio Show. We were just finishing up our first segment, which was the Week in Natural News Review segment. We dealt with two articles. One from Dr. Moore Kohler and one from Natural Health 365. Again, if you came in and start to listen in the middle of the broadcast, the full broadcast would be available about 5 minutes after we go off air. So now that we're going to pivot over to our healing food segment, which is our next segment. And in this segment, as I said today, a few years back, we talked about pineapple. And I'm not going to go into a lot of details that we could go into with pineapple. We could do a whole show on any one food. We could do a whole show on pineapple or oak or anything. But so don't think that the information that I'm about to share with respect to pineapple is exhaustive. It's not. It's just to give you some information of the benefits of pineapple In terms of this second segment, the segment here that we're dealing with in our healing food segment. So let's look a little bit at our pineapple. First of all, pineapple is, like most people will agree, is very great, a great tasting food. And it is full of nutrients. And so let's look at some of the nutrients that is been put into the pineapple by the creator. Now, the pineapple has protein, it has carbohydrates, it has some fiber, it has some vitamin A, it has vitamin B1, vitamin B2, it has some niacin, it has some vitamin B6, it has folate, it has vitamin C, it has some vitamin E, has some calcium, phosphorus, it has some magnesium, it has some iron, has some potassium, a little bit of zinc, and it has about just a small smidgen, if you would, of total fat. And it has a little bit of saturated fat and a little bit of sodium. And so there you have, it's interesting how you have most of your B complex vitamins there. You have fiber, it's packed with nutrients. So it is one of your best foods to eat, nutritious, especially in terms of enzymes. But let's look a little bit more at what's contained in pineapple. One of the things I like about pineapple is its level of vitamin C, and also its level of bromelain. Bromelain is a protein digesting enzyme that's contained in pineapple. It's one of the main enzymes, if not the main enzyme. And it's a protein digesting enzyme, and it's capable of breaking down proteins as well as releasing the amino acids that form them. Because remember, proteins are simply are made up of amino acids. So what bromelain can do, it can break down those proteins and then release the amino acids from the proteins into the body. Because of this, pineapple bromelain has long been used in the food industry as a meat tenderizer. But you didn't know that, did you? So again, that's how. But now that doesn't mean that I encourage. Again, most of you know, who've listened before, I am a plant-based naturopath. So I teach and encourage people to follow a plant-based diet. So I'm not saying to eat flesh and then turn around to eat pineapple to help break down the protein into that flesh. But I'm saying that the meat industry actually uses bromelain as a meat tenderizer. Again, bromelain in your digestive tract, it acts in your digestive tract by breaking down proteins and facilitating digestion in much the same way as the stomach's own pepsin works. So the same way that the pepsin inside of the stomach works to break down proteins, etc., bromelain, which is a digestive enzyme in the pineapple, does something similar. Another thing about pineapple is that it aids overall in digestion. A lot of people have a lot of problems with digesting foods. And so I would recommend, as I said this before, whenever you eat food, whenever you sit down to eat, so you're going to sit down, you're going to eat cooked food. You should always eat some raw food with your cooked food. This will help take some of the burden off of the pancreas and all off the gastrointestinal tract as a whole. Because when you're eating cooked food, the food is typically dead food. So it's going to take a lot of energy and enzymes and whatnot from your body to break it down. So when you eat cooked food, if you always eat some raw food with it, it's going to be less of a burden upon your body. And I teach that you do not eat fruit and vegetables at the same meal, with the exception of pineapple, papaya, and maybe apple. There's some evidence that kind of lends that you can also do it with apple. But so if you're going to eat, say you're going to sit down, you're going to eat some rice and beans and whatever else you're going to eat with it, maybe eat some pineapple with that, or eat an apple. But if you're going to, or eat a salad, but don't eat the apple or the fruit and the, or rather, say if you're going to eat an orange, don't eat the orange together with the salad. So again, that's just a little health tip there that can kind of help facilitate your health a little better along the way. Pineapple has been used to help with a lot of digestive issues. Like you have some people who have certain issues, people who have scanty gastric juice, the pineapple can actually, by eating a pineapple, this can actually help them if they eat pineapple when they eat their meal, because it helps with their if they have low or scanty digestive juice rather. Also, you have some people who have prolapsed stomach, and you also have a gastric atonia, which is basically caused by the stomach inability to empty itself. And so just understand that anything dealing with digestive issues in the gut, pineapple is going to be very beneficial. Also, as I was talking about in the last segment about people with, wrestling with obesity, fresh pineapple, especially juice, if you could drink a little bit of fresh pineapple juice consumed before meal, actually help, or then even with your meal, helps reduce your appetite, and it also constitutes a good complement to if you're on some type of program to lose weight. It is slightly diuretic, so it facilitates urine production. So anything that can do that can actually help with a little bit of detoxification. Now, it's really rich in manganese, which is a trace element or trace mineral in the body, and it is very, very beneficial for your reproductive cells, both for male and females. So it is therefore recommended for those suffering from sterility due to insufficient production of germinal cells, that is sperm in men and ova in women, that you eat foods that are high in manganese, pineapple being one of the best. Also, stomach issues. It has been shown that pineapple is a very powerful inhibitor of the formation of nitrosamines, which basically are carcinogenic, which can lead to stomach cancer. So these carcinogenic substances, which form in the stomach as a chemical reaction between nitrates and certain proteins contained in food, especially red meat, sausages, and things of that nature. And so again, I'm not saying to eat red meat and eat all of these bad foods and then say, well, I'm going to eat some pineapple to kind of offset the damage. Yeah, it will offset the damage to a degree, but eventually you can't kind of pit one against the other, because ultimately you will lose out. The closer you can eat, as I said before, to the colors of the rainbow and to the garden, you will be more sufficiently rewarded, as opposed to saying, well, I know this is bad for me. Like friends, I'm going to smoke cigarettes, but I'm going to drink carrot juice because carrot juice is good to fight cancer. That's a very irrational way to think. So it may sound strange to some of you, but some people actually think that way. And I want to just ask that you don't think that way, but seek to have the best health that you can. And not only so you can have long life, but also have quality of life. And remember, looking at it from a holistic perspective, mentally, physically, spiritually, and emotionally. Finally, vitamin C also can, as I said earlier, vitamin C, pineapple has vitamin C. It has about 15.4 milligrams per serving, so up to 100 grams of the raw edible fruit. So again, it is because of its high amount of vitamin C, pineapple juice is actually recommended for those who might be at high risk for stomach cancer. It's very, very important of recommendation I would make if you're at high risk of stomach cancer to basically eat pineapple as often as you can, or drink the pineapple juice. The fresh pineapple juice is far better than the in most cases. Now there are cases where you can eat the can in certain instances if you can't have it otherwise, but It's far better to eat, in most cases, in almost all cases, it's far better to eat the fresh pineapple juice. Again, this is Dr. Keith Henry. You listen to the Phase 2 Wellness Podcast and Blog Talk Radio Show. We're down now to our final segment, our last 15 minutes or so. And in our final segment, we're going to be talking about the herb sarsaparilla. And sarsaparilla is, like I said earlier, in natural health, the herbalist, it's considered as a very powerful blood cleanser. And so it has some other benefits, but it is considered as a very powerful blood cleanser. And again, it is important to have clean blood, and good circulation. That helps decrease the likelihood of developing a myriad of diseases. So let's look now as we pivot to our third and final segment, which is the healing herb segment. And we'll look at sarsaparilla. Now, sarsaparilla, since about the 1500s, has been used throughout the world to treat syphilis as well as other sexually transmitted diseases. And as I said earlier, it does have a reputation in herbology as a natural, as a blood cleanser and a blood purifier and a general tonic. It's considered to be a sexual stimulant as well as a wound healer. It's also has been used in natural medicine as a diuretic, again, to make you, have to urinate. And again, I don't want to get too technical here, but it has basically natural steroidal glycosides, and basically these are the things that make the herb popular with bodybuilders as an alternative to anabolic steroids for increasing muscle mass, et cetera. Now, sarsaparilla also promotes good circulation. It balances the glandular system and it stimulates the production of natural hormones. And so again, as I said before, some bodybuilders or weightlifters have been, as in the history, they began to take sarsaparilla to fill in rather as a substitute for taking the anabolic steroids because of its capacity to help with muscle growth. And so, but again, there are other people. It's also used as a blood cleanser. It's been used since the 1500s to treat syphilis as well as other sexually transmitted diseases. So again, anytime you have a blood herb that is considered a blood purifier, it's typically going to be used to treat things like that, etc. Now let's look at a few more specifics on how the herb is and has been used and for health, specific health conditions. Now, it's been used for eczema and psoriasis. Conventional medicine has recognized sarsaparilla's worth in treating skin conditions since the 1940s, when the New England Journal of Medicine actually published an article praising the usefulness of sarsaparilla in treating psoriasis. A lot of people wouldn't know this. A lot of people think, herbs are, it's quack medicine here and there, but the fact of the matter is many of the drug treatments, you might not be aware of, many of them copy the molecular structure of a herb of some sort or bark of some sort and make a synthetic form of it and patent it and give it to you as medicine, when in many cases that same herb had been taken in its form could be taken and give you similar benefits without the deadly side effects that can occur when it's separated and a synthetic form is made of the constituents that the scientists think or have found to make it, or they think is the chief active ingredient found in a particular herb. So again, when we take it as found in nature and don't try and make a synthetic form of it, basically the creator has put other constituents in it to keep side effects that would happen in the human body that happen when that particular constituent is separated from it and made into a synthetic form is made of it. So again, the New England Journal of Medicine, as far back as the 1940s, as I said earlier, published an article praising the usefulness of sarsaparilla in treating psoriasis. Now, also, they haven't really done any research to show specifically exactly how the herb works. There are numerous reports of its usefulness in treating those who suffer from eczema, psoriasis, as well as and leprosy. So again, I said before, anytime you have an herb that is a blood purifier, that's you're going to kind of get those types of benefits and being able to clear the blood and help fight the blood and to purify these microbes and viruses and bacteria and other impurities in the blood, which ends up causing the body rather to fall into a state of some type of disease or abnormality. Secondly, another way that sarsaparilla has been used, it's been used to help those suffering from gout. Now, what is gout? Gout, the symptoms of gout, it's just a form of arthritis. It's considered a form of arthritis, if you will. But the painful symptoms of gout occur when uric acid crystals form in your joints. And sarsaparilla actually stimulates urination and actually increases the excretion of uric acid, reducing the incidence of gout. That's basically how it, is believed to work when treating, when working with people who have gout. So then instead of that uric acid accumulating in the bones, typically in the big toe, because of the ability of sarsaparilla, because of his diuretic ability, it can send that, it can basically help the body facilitate getting that urine out of the body, i.e. uric acid, out of the body, and then lessening the likelihood that it's going to accumulate in the joints, and specifically in the big toe, which you see in gout. Sarsaparilla will not relieve an acute case of gout, however, but it can help to prevent attacks if it's been taken over a period of weeks or months. There would be other things that you would use as opposed to sarsaparilla, because sarsaparilla is a blood cleanser and a tonic, but there are other herbs that you might use if you get into a period of an acute phase of gout. There are other herbs that you could use that specifically for pain, which perhaps we will talk about in the future here on Phase 3 Wellness. Again, you're listening to Phase 3 Wellness. I'm Dr. Keith Henry. I'm a naturopathic doctor. We're in our third and final segment, the Healing Herb segment. Today we're talking about, in this segment, we're talking about the herb sarsaparilla, which it is a blood cleanser, a blood purifier. It's been seen as such in natural medicine for a long time. As I said earlier, it's been used to treat sexually transmitted diseases such as syphilis in the past. And it's also been used by bodybuilders as an alternative to anabolic steroids for helping to increase their muscle mass. It's been used to help in eczema and psoriasis, as well as leprosy. And another way it's been used is in menopause-related problems and diminished sex drive. And so, again, sometimes you listen to these, you listen to the radio, and their ads and whatnot, they're talking about diminished sex drive in both men and women, and erectile dysfunction, and just not, people don't have the desire anymore. So sarsaparilla is one of the herbs that have been used to help with this. Now, many aphrodisiacs for men act by increasing blood circulation to the penis. This is why some of these, the popular drugs that they talk about, Viagra and some of these things, these drugs, you have herbs that work in a similar way, but most of the time, that's how the drugs work as well. These aphrodisiacs work by increasing blood flow or blood circulation to the penis. But this carries the risk of creating high blood pressure in the body as a whole. This is why when you listen to those commercials and those ads, they warn about if you're taking, they warn that if you're taking one of these drugs, if your blood pressure goes up, to stop immediately and contact the doctor, because by increasing the circulation to the penis, it's actually going to also increase, has the risk of increasing blood pressure in the entire body. So that's one of the dangers with these types of aphrodisiac, if you will. Sarsaparilla instead acts by stimulating the production of testosterone, which helps to restore both sexual interest and erectile function. It is also used to treat lack of sexual desire in women with inadequate testosterone production. So that's, if you think about it, that's how it works differently. So as opposed to simply increasing blood circulation, it actually increases the testosterone levels in a natural way without taking synthetic testosterone, and helps with the erectile dysfunction, and it also helps with the desire for women who may be losing their desire. A lot of times women, when they get into their menopause, not all women, but some women, when they get into menopause, they may lose to some degree some of their sexual desire. And if that's the case, sarsaparilla could be considered as a herb to help with that. Now, again, I would always recommend, before just jumping and taking something, that you ideally have yourself a naturopath or herbalist or some type of person who is who you trust and who you understand their background, and who you know personally, who has some experience in dealing with people with from a natural perspective. So again, do your own research first. Do your own research, but also in tandem with your own research, talk to a knowledgeable and competent a natural health practitioner, and maybe to help give you some guidance. Even if it's a medical doctor who actually uses natural medicine in his or her practice, or a naturopath or a medical doctor, you have many medical doctors now who are not many, but you have some who are who also integrate natural herbs and things in their practice because of their many times because of their membership in the AMA of their state, they can't do so. But many of them would do as much as they can. Or it's like some people I know, some people will have a medical doctor and they will have a naturopath, or they have a medical doctor and they have a herbalist. So again, remember, your health is your responsibility. So, you know, do whatever is necessary to make sure that you're taking care of your health. And again, so again, if you're having one of these problems that we were talking about, you may want psoriasis, eczema, or even erectile dysfunction. At least look into, or even if you just need to clean, feel that you need to clean your blood, which is always a good thing, having a blood purifier. Sarsaparilla is one of the things, one of the herbs that I would highly recommend that you look into. Now, it's available in capsules, and it's available in fluid extracts, tinctures. Can be found to be ineffective since the active chemical constituents of the herb are soluble in water, but not in alcohol. So again, it's probably best to take the tea, the sarsaparilla tea, or take it in capsules, because when you make the tincture in the alcohol, now it's not soluble, so you're not going to really get the benefits. And again, large doses of the saponin and the sarsaparilla can also cause gastrointestinal irritation. All you have to do, let's say you take a glass of the tea and it gives you a little bit of gastrointestinal irritation, just cut back on the amount. Take maybe a half a glass. So again, it's not really going to, that's basically the way to deal with that. Again, the herb sarsaparilla is considered a very beneficial herb, and for these things that we've stated. Some other things also it's been used to be beneficial for in specific diseases and abnormalities, and especially when combined with other herbs that may also do the same thing in terms of, say, for instance, if you're combining sarsaparilla with another blood cleansing herb like burdock root, so now you're getting an even more powerful activation of cleansing the blood or purifying the blood. And then by doing this, you will rectify some of the symptoms that are the causes of the blood being dirty or being impure in the first place. So again, it is one of those herbs that the Creator has given us. There's many, 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 many herbs. And again, I have not tried to do an exhaustive study on the herb either. Again, we could do an entire show just on the herb sarsaparilla, how it's been used, what amounts it's been used, etc. But this is why I said that if you want to look into using it for your own health or for the health of your loved ones, do your own research and also work with a competent, knowledgeable, some type of natural health practitioner, be it a naturopath or herbalist, or lifestyle coach that's also trained in natural remedies, or a medical doctor who's trained in natural remedies and who's not antagonistic toward natural remedies, or even a chiropractor, anyone who's also who's into natural remedies, natural health, and who is competent in the use of these things. Because normally, if you may be on some type of medications, you want to make sure there are no contraindications with sarsaparilla and with any medications you may be on, or any other health issues you may have. So this is why I often tell people to make sure that you check with a practitioner to get you on the right track, and which is excellent thing to do. I thank you for listening. I'm down to about a minute and 16 seconds. I don't know if you can hear it in the background, but we're getting some pretty strong thunderstorms here in the Orlando area. And again, a special prayer out to our friends over in North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia area has been hit by the hurricane. We have you in our prayers, and we know that we get hurricanes here quite often in Florida, so we understand to some degree what you're going through. And this is Dr. Keith Henry. I want to thank you for listening, and remember this: if you came in and started to listen somewhere in the middle of the live broadcast, this broadcast will be available in probably about 3 to 5 minutes. You can listen to it. Again, it'll be up on sites, on Facebook, YouTube, as well as some podcast sites. So again, remember to not only listen to this yourself, but also listen to pass it around to your friends, your loved ones. Again, thank you for listening. Until next time, have a blessed week. This is Dr. Keith Henry signing off from Faith Free Brothers.